Avery Stoneman Douglas High School, the Parkland, Florida community, and all the victims of school violence in our country. So if you'd please join me in a moment of silence. Thank you. Do we have consensus on the order of business? And I would like to ask that that we move 6.02 immediately after consensus on the order of business. Do we have consent? Is that okay with everybody? Okay. Let's move on then to item number 6.02, which is a Morro Bay High School theater presentation.
So I would like to introduce some phenomenal student actresses and actors and performers. And who you have here is drama director, Noelle Eben. And these three wonderful students are performers in the Little Shop of Horrors presentation in the next couple weeks at Morro Bay High School, Marissa, Edie, and Julia.
All right. Hello, good evening, everybody. My name's Julia, Marissa Edie, and we're here representing the Morro Bay High School Theater Arts Department. Today we are promoting our show, Little Shop of Horrors, which is being shown March 15th, 16th, and 17th at 7:30 in the Morro Bay Cafeteria. We implore you all to come. It's a great show, comedy, music, acting, fun, laughs, good stuff. Today, we'd like to present to you our opening song, which is the prologue to Little Shop of Horrors, called Little Shop of Horrors. So please enjoy it. Thank you all for calling us here, and let's do this.
Hit the dirt, baby. Red. Noelle Even. I'm their director. I just want to say that we got a TEACH grant at your last board meeting, so I just want to say thanks for that, and that's why we wanted to come. So thanks for granting us that, and thank you for having us.
And Noelle, so it's 3:15, 3:16, and 3:17. At what time?
At 7:30 p.m.
And where can people get tickets if they'd like to do that?
We're going to make an Eventbrite. So online on eventbrite.com, you can buy tickets there, or at the door, it's cashier check only.
Okay. Well, is that something that you guys hooked to the Morro Bay website, to the Morro Bay High School website as well?
Yes, so we do have a theater website too.
Okay, so anybody interested can go to the Morro Bay High. Well, it's slcusd.org/MBHS or something like that,
yeah.
Is it not?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We have to run back to rehearsal.
Oh,
so
thank you. So now let's move on to item 5.02, action on two stipulated student discipline agreements. I think I'd like to take these one by one. So if someone would like to make a motion for student A, I'd like to hear that.
I will make a motion to accept the stipulated expulsion on student A as presented.
We have a motion by Mrs. Shepherd. Do I have a second? Seconded by Mr. Millar. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries 7-0. Let's move on then to student B. I'd like to hear a motion for that, please.
I move that we do the stipulated expulsion as described.
Okay.
On student B.
So we have a motion for student B. Would someone like to make a second? Mr. Buckman seconds that. Any discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to approval of the minutes for 2/13/2018.
I'll move approval of the minutes of 2/13/2018.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Millar. Do I hear a second for that? Mr. Buckman, I'll go with Mr. Buckman on that one. We have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mr. Buckman. Is there any discussion or corrections? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 5.04, approval of minutes of 2/15. Would someone like to make a motion for that? Been moved by Mr. Quisenberry, seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. Any discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 6.01, student representatives to the board. Take it away. And you've already had a great introduction.
I know, right? Although I'm not going to sing this, but it's all right. All right. So Ms. Sala, one of our world history teachers, her students, last week, I think they're still doing it this week, are creating, Congolese-style masks. I might be butchering that word, and rewriting the imperialist poem The White Man's Burden into a poem that celebrates African culture to commemorate Black History Month. Senior Ethan Carroll won Best Courtroom Journalist for the county and will be representing MBHS at the state competition in Orange County, traveling with Slow High. So that was for our Poetry Out Loud contest. He did really well. As you can tell. Last week was National FFA Week. Our FFA planned a series of events such as Animal Print Tuesday and Western Wednesday, as well as teaching students how to swing dance in the quad during lunch. They finished their week with an annual barn dance at the school farm. It was really cool to see FFA put on something, because normally ASB is doing stuff like that, so it's good to get FFA and other clubs involved with activities. And then our MBHS search team, this past Sunday at Ventura Point, the Pirates defeated Palisades 39-22 in weak windy conditions. Addie Mahan captured a first in women's longboard. Cash Merchant stepped his way to a fourth in men's longboard, and Tess Endersley placed sixth in women's shortboard. And then Cody Hopman stepped up to support the team in the bodyboard division and placed fourth overall. So we did really well. Our surf team is one of the best teams we have. We're always competing and always
getting to the top, so that's really exciting. And then last week, we had our first swim and dive meet in the new pool with the LPAL pentathlon. And I was talking to a bunch of my friends that are in swim, and they were placing first in all of their events. It's not like a major event, but it's like to get their times down. So it was really exciting to see that. And then next week will be our annual Neon Spirit Week with a luau-themed dance on Friday. We have events such as Beachwear Day and Neon Day for students to participate in and get a chance to win free tickets. This is one of our biggest dances, so we're hoping as ASB to make a lot of profit off of this so we can do more to give back to the students. And Ms. Brinkman's psychology students are working on a project where they are researching a topic related to adolescent development and writing an article for their second edition of their On the Brink magazine. One of the groups, Maylene Castillo, Justin Castillo, and Connie Guerrero, decided to take their project about stress a step further and created an amazing video. You guys can see the video. I don't know. I think it's on the MBHS website, but I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, it was really cool to see them do that. Our school's getting into mental health more and promoting kids, if they need help with stuff like that, that they can go to any of the teachers and they'll be there to support them. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much. We already did 6.02. We have some more exciting news and another exciting presentation. We'll go to item number 6.03, Los Osos Middle Schools. Schools to watch, Mr. Illig.
Good evening. Mrs. Holmes, I sent a presentation to you as well, so picture's worth a thousand words. So really, really excited to be invited tonight to talk a little about Los Osos Middle School being honored and recognized as a school to watch. We are the first school in San Luis Obispo County to have this initiative here. Perfect. Now I can play with technology while I talk. Makes it much easier for me. So I wanted to talk just a little bit about what Schools to Watch is and our process of how we got to where we are with Schools to Watch. First of all, it was introduced to me by Dr. Prater 4 years ago. And he gently led me know to read a little bit about taking center stage and what an excellent middle school is. And knowing that our goal at Los Osos Middle School is to be excellent at all times, we started this study, and I'll talk a little bit about what this means. All right, so there's four core areas in Schools to Watch, and it's a rubric where we study all these areas of our middle school under four different areas. The one area is academic excellence. And so about 3 years ago, we started with just bringing forward this terminology to our school staff to start thinking about who we are and what do we want to be. And so we open every single staff meeting with each of the four areas, and we read it aloud to the staff so that it becomes our mantra of who we are and what we want to be. So our first one is academic excellence, and what that is high-performing schools with middle grades are academically excellent, and they challenge students to use their minds well. So there's a rubric that we look at, and I'll go through the process and the nitty-gritty of it. But what does that mean? You know, we all say we want to be academically excellent. That's a great thing, to be academically excellent. But within this rubric, it's a self-study where we as staff and teachers look to see where we're doing well in and where there's areas that need growth. So certain questions, for example, in the rubric, there's about 150 questions, but I highlighted a few just to sort of put some, you know, meat on the bones of what does it mean to be academically excellent. So, for example, teachers make connections across disciplines to reinforce important concepts, assist students in thinking critically, applying what they've learned for real-world problems. That was one area where we were just about in the middle. We were not overly excelling, but we're looking to build onto that. And with our whole STEAM program and all our different things that we have here, we're looking to see how we can have kids critically think and move forward. We use frequent assessments. I don't want to read the whole rubric. There's a lot in there. Frequent opportunities for students to enhance achievement by deepening their knowledge with their colleagues, and then also to improve their standards-based practice, stuff like that. Okay, there's a bunch. I'll just move forward to the next one. developmental responsiveness. So high-performing schools with the middle grades are sensitive to the unique needs of early adolescents. The beauty of this part is that we're not preparing them for high school. We're not the big elementary. We're not the mini high school. We are a middle school, and we celebrate having early adolescence and that very quirky, awkward stage of being a sixth grader, being a seventh grader, and being an eighth grader. So a couple things in the rubric on developmental responsiveness is like a personalized environment, right? Really creating opportunities for kids to sort of meet what their need might be and personalizing their education. Teachers foster curiosity, creativity, and developmental of social skills. We know our middle schoolers can use some developmental of social skills while we celebrate the awkward social skills that they're practicing as well in a supportive environment. We use an interdisciplinary approach and, again, real-world problems. They have students have, and here's an area that we were a little bit lower on, which is also fascinating. Students have an opportunity for voice, posing questions, reflecting on experiences, and participating in decisions and leadership activities. That linked in really great with our student superintendent senate, where the kids are given voice to be able to bring forward different areas and concerns that we have. So that's one of our areas of growth. Next up, we have social equity, and we hear a lot about social equity. What does that mean for the middle school? And it's really being democratic and fair, providing students with high-quality teachers, resources, learning opportunities, and supports, and keeping positive options open for all students. This is really the most fun slide to read aloud to the staff at every one of my staff meetings, because reaffirming the high-quality teachers, this whole process of becoming a Schools to Watch really hinged on the passion and the dedication of our teachers who are with our students every single day. Without them being there and working on every aspect of our school, it wouldn't be possible. So certain things there is, for example, the achievement gap, right, which is very important to us here at Los Osos and in our district. To the fullest extent possible, including English learners, students with disabilities, gifted, honored students, participate in heterogeneous classes with high academic supports and behavioral expectations, equal access for activities, having ongoing supports and learning about students' cultures, stuff like that. Then another one where we scored relatively high was each student is appreciated and respected, and every student has an adult advocate and supporter in the school. That's been a huge initiative for us, for every kid to feel that connectedness and have at least one person in their day that they feel that cares about them. Now, granted, they have six opportunities in the day, but we're just trying to get at least one, and of course, you know, kids have multiple teachers that they connect with. The fourth area in the rubric is organizational structures and processes. And this is really putting together norms and structures and arrangements that orchestrate the ability for all these interventions to take place, for the ability for social equity to take place, for the ability of academic excellence. So we have a shared vision, which is huge. So our visionary statement are these four areas as we open each staff meeting. Every decision we make here at Los Osos Middle School is under the frame of these four areas. If it doesn't move this forward, we're not going to do it. It's very comprehensive, so you could pretty much go from underwater basket weaving to anything you want, and you'd be able to fit it in here. But we want it to be structurally set up in a way that there's an environment that has that need for early adolescents to be able to meet their needs and help them achieve academic excellence. Like, for example, one of those, learning is ongoing for everyone. That's for students, that's for staff, that's for teachers, that's for everybody on the campus. The school staff holds itself accountable for student success. That's huge. You know, we want to look at our formative data, our assessment data, to see where kids are and how they're doing. Barriers are viewed as challenges, not problems, and then we partner with colleges, universities, stuff like that. So that's just sort of like when people say, what do these things mean? I wanted to highlight a few topics in there. So just briefly, I'm not going to read this whole thing. What was our formal process? We started in January 2016. It's a little different from being a distinguished school, or a little different from getting a golden award or whatever. It's a pretty lengthy process. It's not just analyzing where your school is and saying, here's our application, you know, we're great and excellent. It's more of a continuous improvement model where we're looking at this rubric, we're looking at challenges, we're looking at opportunities. How can we grow? Where do we find that we fall short, and how can we build on that? And it's sort of a third party, this rubric thing, and there's a link hidden in there if you have the actual PowerPoint where you could read it, where you can have a third party analysis of where you are and where you're going in terms of excellence. So we started in January 2016, brought it to our leadership team, studied other schools to watch. Because first of all, what are we watching for, right? I mean, that sounds like a great option, but what does it mean? And so our teacher leaders each received a domain, and then they had a subgroup under them with the rest of our staff that really pursued where we are and where we need to go and where our areas of growth was. Our initial look in January of 2016 really brought forward a bunch of areas of growth. I mean, it just illuminated all these things that we needed to do to improve. And so we strategically looked at which things can we do to be able to meet the needs of the adolescents. It's not about the rubric. It's about improving the school. So in March through May, we really did a bunch of staff development that our teachers created to be able to actually make this happen and have our boots on the ground to get going. In August, we implemented in all four domains. September, we did our final self-study rubric, which gave us these results. And then completed the application. We had our validation visit. As you all know, you came. Thank you for coming on with 3 days' notice. I think it might be their trick where you can't fix your school real quick within 2 days. It was just like, come on over and check it out. So it was fun for them to see. We had virtually no warning. And then coming up next is our reassessment. It's a continuous improvement model. So in March, we're going to take our rubric again as a staff, see where we looked at opportunities for growth and how are we growing and how are we improving. And then I put on the bottom there, and I said this before, all of this is only possible due to teacher passion at our site. And so the passion of our teachers here at our site, that fire to be with kids, to connect with kids, to help kids learn, to meet them as a unique adolescent, that is what has brought us to where we are right now with this. So it's passion and dedication of the teachers every day in the classroom with the kids. What is the criteria? So what do they look at? So they look at the rubric. They look at your test scores by cohort. So what was powerful for us is because we are a 6th through 8th grade middle school, we are able to show 3 years of academic growth. So we can look and show these are the interventions that we've structured in 6th grade, and this is how it plays out in 7th grade, and then how it improves in 8th grade. So looking at sort of that 3 years growth, they look at the achievement gap, suspension data, math placement, your teaching model and system, like how teachers are evaluated, so Danielson. Master schedule for social equity, that's a pretty big one as well. So they really delved pretty deep into our master schedule by year in a continuum over 3 years. So I had to go 3 years back. What did our master schedule look like? How did we have interventions placed in sixth grade? And then the following year, they look at the cohort. Okay, so you had this intervention in sixth grade. Are these kids still in intervention in seventh grade, or have the interventions worked so you can move them on into seventh grade and then on to eighth grade? So that was a pretty deep part of the whole application, was looking at the master schedule for that organizational structure and seeing how are you capitalizing on things. So we did some interesting things over the past 3 years, and I won't get into it, but you know, when there were new curriculum adoptions, having common preps, for example, for teachers, and then also sort of teaming teachers in certain areas to be able to meet the need under the achievement gap and students that have greater amounts of needs. And for us, a big thing is the intervention continuum over 3 years. Our kids don't just come and go, right? We've got them for 3 years, which is wonderful. I'm not done yet, sorry. Then their big thing is like, so the question is, well, what is actually worth watching here, right? So we're schools to watch. What's worth watching? So first of all, they're not in any particular order, but our strategic scheduling for social equity, and so that really looks at the achievement gap, which I just mentioned right now. Our advisory program, that connectedness with kids, just huge. Restorative approach, where we're, I think you know about restorative approach and restorative justice. Our STEAM program, of course, that real-world application with kids. Formative and summative articulated data cycle, really looking how we can inform our instruction. Our humanities approach is huge, where our English and social studies is core together throughout the school. Mathematics, our individualized learning plans, and then also our interdependent community partnerships, our partnerships with Cal Poly, with Cuesta, and other agencies here in town. So what's next? I'm almost done. Next is we're going to be presented with our award at the CLMS conference in Sacramento. That's this weekend on Thursday and then again on Saturday. So excited for that. Mr. Bloom, my assistant principal, and I are presenting two sessions at the conference. One is Master Scheduling for Social Equity, and then the other session is the intersection of student achievement with student climate, how restorative approach really has helped out with our student achievement. Then on March 19th, that's on a Monday, we're going to be officially bestowed with the banner here. We'll have a big assembly. You guys will be, all of you will be invited to that. And we'll have our whole school, all our students, we'll invite our parents as well, and really celebrate this moment with everybody. And then between June 27th and 30th, our Los Osos Middle School will be recognized in Washington, D.C. At the National Forum for Middle School Reform. So that's really exciting to have national recognition. So all of this really is not all about the celebration, but really the focus on the future, right? So we're here right now, but it's not done. This is only the beginning, right? So our focus on the future is to revisit our rubric. We are definitely not fours on everything, and looking at how we can continuously improve. The other big outcome from this whole process is just that teacher passion and ownership of wanting to, or just that recognition that yes, we're on the map, but also wanting to improve and meet the needs of our learners. And the beauty of this rubric is it's not an accusatory rubric. It's not like, you know, why are you not, don't have real world concepts or whatever it might be. It just celebrates these huge and amazing things, and then that's how we refine our curriculum and our daily experience for all kids. So I'm just going to close with why we're here, right? This is one of my slides that we have, and this leads into our ESLers here at Los Osos Middle School. And we ask our LOMS students, why are we here? What do we want to produce? So for LOMS, we'd say, I'm a critical thinker, I'm a responsible global citizen, an effective communicator, and a technology user and creator. So thank you for your time.
So before you go, let's see if there are any comments from board members or questions from board members. Mrs. Sheffer?
A quick question, Mr. Illig. When you were referring to the surveys about student climate and their responses, what response did you have from students? I mean, how many, did all students participate?
So,
can you give me a percentage?
So we use multiple data sources. We use our California Healthy Kids Survey. We did also survey all our students, so we wanted 100% set of responses from kids in terms of knowing where they are, what's next for them, and what's important for them, to be able to give the students that student voice. And then, you know, after our application here, we did the Youth Truth Survey as well, which blended in, right, completely really well in terms of where kids are. We also did student forums where we asked them questions, just basically sat in the room, just me and the kids, and just said, hey, what do you like about LOMS? How can we improve LOMS? How can we make it better? Now, the kids want it to happen the next day, right? But we have to sort of implement now and then, you know, make it happen by, you know, the following fall or wherever it is to, you know, bring teachers and students along. So,
okay, so you feel that you heard from every student and every teacher and staff member at the school?
We have multiple mechanisms of getting a response from teachers as well as students. So we do some of our teacher surveys anonymously, where I have this blue sheet where I just have, it's a blank sheet, and I tell them, just tell me anything you want about the state of the school. And you can type it, you can write it, you don't have to write your name on it, but I want to get a balanced voice of things that are celebrations and things that are opportunities for growth. And that's been really positive, because in the beginning, nobody would write their name on it, and they would just, you know, let me have it, you know, in a way. But it was also very powerful to be able to bring the data together to see, you know, because they're, people are talking about whatever they're talking about everywhere else, but they're not talking with administration, right? And so we wanted to have that voice to be able to know you know, what the feeling is and where people are and what they would want. We've done these, what we call the blue sheets, multiple times now over, you know, the past 4 years. Now people are writing their names on it because they feel that they can trust that I'm not going to, like, read it out loud and be like, what are you saying, you know, and actually be able to have a community conversation about how we can improve. So that's been...
That's an environment of trust you've created.
An environment of... Yeah. It's, the teachers are really, really passionate about what they do, and that's really exciting and a blessing to be here.
Thank you, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Catherine?
Yes, Mr. Lee. You mentioned the Humanities Integration Program, and I was most struck by that. I don't believe I've seen that in a middle school. Can you just explain that briefly of how that works?
So with some staffing changes that we had over the past few years, we've restructured our English and our social studies where they're core together in a class. So in sixth grade, initially, when sixth grade came here, it was a humanities approach, so they would have the same teacher for English as they have for history. So over the past 2 years, we've grown that up into seventh and in eighth grade. So our current students don't even know that you could have a separate English teacher from a history teacher. So strategically, we brought that in really to help us with our achievement gap. It was sort of the initial reason why we wanted there, because we wanted more time for English where we needed English and more time for history where we needed history. So when teachers have a double period with kids, then it's much more strategic. We've also found that the teacher won't give them an English essay and a history essay on the same day because they're one and the same teacher. So combining that knowledge into one has been really positive, and kids have essentially less irons in the fire or more purposeful teaching. So it's been an exciting approach.
Excellent. I love it. Thank you.
And I have to say, and I know Dr. Prater wants to say something, just on behalf of the board, we're so proud of what you and your staff have done and your students have done here at Los Osos Middle School. This is a phenomenal honor for you and the community. So congratulations. And I have to tell a little story before we go on, before I turn it over to Dr. Prater. So I don't know if you remember, how long has Mr. Illig been with us? 4 years or five
four,
years now?
4 years.
4 years. So Dr. Prater and I were having a conference in his office, and he was telling me he was going to be interviewing a principal candidate. And so I walked out of the office, and you were sitting there. I don't know if you remember that. You were.
Okay.
And I looked at this guy and I go, okay, well, let's see, you know, okay, we'll see how it goes. After you were interviewed, I talked to Dr. Prater, and Dr. Prater said, this is the guy. And I think it's fair to say that you were. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Dr. Prater?
Yeah, before you go, okay. Mr. Illig, I just want to acknowledge, I know Mr. Illig gave much of the credit to the teachers, and there's truth in that. Without a doubt. But Schools to Watch is about a system of believers in kids. And as you can see, those four areas, each of them carries with it tremendous complexity. Everything about this process is challenging to the leadership of the school, to the parent community, to the teaching community, and to the support community. Because it asks everyone to self-reflect. This honor is truly about self-reflection on what are we doing to ensure that kids get the very best that they deserve. So Los Osos Middle School is joining a family of middle schools across the country that are truly exceptional places. And I look forward to being a part of that. I was a part of a middle school program many years ago that did this, and I still receive communication, feedback, and requests to come back in and participate in that whole family component. So once you are in this, what happens is middle schools across the state want to come see what you're doing, and they try to replicate what you're doing. And that's the whole piece of this continuous improvement. So I just commend you. I have a tremendous amount of respect for the work that I know you put into it, along with your staff. So super proud of Los Osos Middle School.
Thank
Excellent.
You so much.
So I just want to address correspondence really quickly. The board itself did not receive correspondence. However, each board member, I do believe, received an email from Arlene Yost talking about school safety. Before we move on to public comment, I see, Ratik, you came in a little bit late. Do you have a report for us?
I do. I apologize for being late. The one thing that Carol told me before she left office was to never, ever, ever go to the wrong school meeting location. And unfortunately, it's finals week at SLO High, and I'm quite overwhelmed. So I showed up at the district office at 6 o'clock, realized there was no Mercedes parked outside, which I always see when I roll up to a district office meeting. So, or school meeting, excuse me. So I ran or drove over here as quickly as I could, in the speed limit, of course. Yeah, as I said, finals week at SLO High. This is definitely an overwhelming time for many, many students that's, in general, but a fun week nonetheless because we have a short day, Thursday and Friday. Last Friday, we had a student barbecue. Excuse me, I'm going to pull up my notes real quick. Well, we had a student barbecue last Friday where we each teacher highlights two students. And I've talked about this before, but it's really important for Mr. Johnson really highlight or emphasizes the fact that students need to be highlighted for not just athletics or academics, but this gives teachers a chance for students to be highlighted through anything that they may do throughout their class period, like helping another student out or picking up trash or anything that the teacher sees a student shine outside of just academics or athletics or anything in that regard. So it's important for teachers, at least, to highlight those students who don't usually get highlighted. And we had around 150 students at that barbecue, and it was a diverse group of students. Of course, we have a diverse population, so that was really cool to see. Other than that, I wanted to talk about the ASB has been going to, we have a special ed department, of course, and every week on Friday our ASB goes up. We send a group of around five or six students up to the special ed department to basically mingle with the students there and get that level of interaction that they may not receive throughout the day or during school in general. And it's really important for those students to be integrated into normal school society as much as possible, because after high school they're going to be kind of integrated into society. And so it's having that form of ASB students knowing how to interact with different students and those students knowing how to interact in general is important. And I apologize for showing up late once again. I'm not sure if Alexa has spoken yet. But I also wanted to talk about on the 14th of March, many students will be walking out of school at 10 a.m. across the nation to show solidarity for the Parkland, Florida shooting. Now, right now, I speak as an individual, not representing my school at all. And I just want to say that I will be walking out myself, and I'll be encouraging other students to walk out as well. I'll say a couple words. Myself and a couple other students have organized a small rally where we will honor these students who gave their lives for us, and I'll say a couple words, but I think, in general, I think students who are walking out, it's important for them to know that they're being leaders and showing solidarity because, excuse me, I'm going to try not saying too much, but when students walk out, I want them to know that they're showing change. And Ms. Holmes, if you can pull up the image I sent you, we will be selling a shirt designed by myself and a couple other students, but this opportunity to plan this walk out with Oliver Hicks, Grayson Perlmutter, Thomas Prater, and a couple other students, I've been able to work with Alexa from Morro Bay and students even outside of our district from AG to coordinate a cohesive effort to show solidarity across the nation. But I think beyond that, I think this is showing that something has to be done about this. Now, I understand that the school board has done measures like last year about the concealed carry banner or whatever it was. Excuse me if I'm wrong about that. And I appreciate everything you guys have done, and I appreciate you giving me the platform to speak here. And I understand that there's measures being taken with Measure D, putting a gate around our campus. So I really do appreciate how much the school board is receptive to all of our students. And I also would like to formally invite you guys to the walkout on March 14th at 10 a.m. Now I understand the Brown Act kind of limits the amount of people who can show up, but having some adults there showing support in our students and knowing that we have a solid board behind us that supports our cause would mean a lot to our students. So thank you for listening to me. I know I talk a lot sometimes and I get too passionate, but it really does mean a lot to me and the student body in general. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ratik. Mrs. Roger.
Well, Ratik, on the heels of that, this seems like a crazy comment, but you're explaining to us that you went to the wrong meeting location. Just makes me laugh, because I wonder if everybody on this board will raise their hand if they've gone to the wrong meeting location. So, yeah, you are in good company. We understand how that happens, so no problem with being late, and thank you for your report.
Great.
And a quick slow high announcement. It sounds like the girls' soccer team won 2-1 tonight.
Ooh.
So they'll be in the CIF finals.
Okay. Well, let's move on to public comment. We have several requests to speak to the board. Oh, and Ratik. Of course, as always, you're welcome to stay, but we understand that it's finals week. We appreciate that you drove safely here and that you made it here safely, and we do appreciate hearing from you. So thank you very much. So for public comment, the public comment time is 3 minutes. The board will not respond to your comments, but we will listen attentively. Mrs. Holmes, do you want to get up the three-minute timer, please? Perfect. And the first person I'd like to call up is Michelle Garner.
I have some materials, supporting materials tonight. I don't know.
And if you have supporting materials, please just give them to Mrs. Holmes, and she'll make sure.
I don't think I made enough copies, but
she'll make sure that the board gets copies of them. And if there aren't enough copies, then she'll probably scan them and send them to us.
Okay.
So we will receive those.
Thank you. Sorry, I'm a little hoarse tonight. Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Michelle Garner. I know some of you know me. I come before you in several capacities this evening. I'm wife to one of your teachers. I'm mom to two of your kindergarten students. I'm an educator formerly with this district, and I am the leader for the newly formed Central Coast chapter of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. Recent events in Parkland, Florida, a quiet, peaceful, idyllic community such as this, have underscored the need for action right here in San Luis Obispo. We need to talk to parents and children about safe gun storage, and Moms Demand, my group, offers a free program called Be Smart for Kids, which is a conversation about kids, guns, and safe storage and suicide prevention. Be Smart is supported by the National PTA, and I would be happy to present to our schools, to your teacher or principal meetings and board meetings, parent groups, and we can even empower and train our teens to talk to other teens about this subject and give this workshop, and like I said, it's completely free. We need to raise awareness about our state's gun violence restraining order, which is a law that, if in place in Florida, would have prevented that tragedy. And it's a law that's here in California, but it only works if people know about it. So we need to be able to get that information out to parents and families. And we need to come together as a community to raise awareness about gun violence prevention. Not only the mass shootings, but the 96 Americans who are killed daily by guns. So tonight I submit to you some materials about our Be Smart program, as well as a copy of the resolution that is being implemented tonight at a school board meeting in San Diego Unified about gun violence and urging federal action to protect our students and our schools. And I urge you to review those items and take similar actions. And you can always contact me. My contact info is on the note I submitted, but I can get that to you otherwise. And just in closing, we don't have to live like this, and we don't have to die like this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michelle. Catherine Heck.
Thank you. I came to support Michelle. I'm Catherine Heck, and I have an eighth grader at Laguna Middle and a senior at Slo High, so I'm sure I'm familiar with how busy you are right now. And I am also a maternal and child health epidemiologist. I previously worked at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and at the State Health Department, and I now work remotely for UC San Francisco. So I just wanted to come to express the fact that, I mean, we're all devastated by what happened in Parkland, and we want to prevent anything like that from happening here in our schools. And I'm a little troubled by the idea that seems to be out there as a policy idea that bringing more guns into our schools will increase safety, because the research that has been published since the 1980s, for example, Arthur Kellerman in the New England Journal of Medicine, has demonstrated the more guns that you have around, the increasing rate you have of accidents, homicide, and suicide. So I just wanted to express a little bit of support for research-based, evidence-based policies in our schools, and in contrast to some of the ideas that are floating out there in society at the moment. And one example that struck me a few days ago in Minnesota, there was a resource officer who had a loaded weapon with him in a school, and a third grader put his hand into the holster and the gun went off and luckily shot into the floor and didn't hurt anyone. But humans make mistakes, even if we're trained and we try to do the best we can. So I just wanted to come and express that. Thank you all.
Thank you very much. Dr. Prater, I believe that either last year or the year before we passed a board policy stating that firearms were not allowed on our campuses. Is that correct?
Yes. There was a legislative effort to offer boards the opportunity to declare whether they would like the superintendent to give permission for certain employees to have weapons at school. The board passed a resolution to not allow the superintendent to have that discretion. Instead, the only person or people that are allowed on our campus with weapons would be trained school resource officers or police officers.
Thank you. Next, we have Ashley Smith.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm the crazy lady who brought her four kids to the school board meeting tonight.
You know what? They remind us of what our responsibilities are, so thank you for bringing them.
I'm sure your meetings have been a lot quieter than this one is tonight. But my name is Ashley Smith. I live in Morro Bay. I am a mom of four, two of which who are in the school system currently. Okay, I knew this would probably happen, so I took some notes. So the recent school shootings that have been happening across the country have had me asking a lot of questions. The most important question that keeps burning in my mind is what brought me here tonight, which is, are our teachers CPR and first aid certified? Do our classrooms have ample first aid kits that have supplies and enough supplies to tend to a gunshot wound? Through research, I have learned that California is one of 19 states that requires teachers to be CPR and first aid certified. And my question has been, or to you tonight, is do we as a district have the same requirements? If so, how do we monitor that teachers are staying on top of their certifications? And do we require them to renew them every 2 years like the Red Cross recommends? As a wife of a fireman, I know that firemen, paramedics, and EMTs are not allowed to set foot on an active shooter incident until police officers give the all clear. That means that staff and students are not getting the medical attention when they need it in the time that they need it. The last current shooting was given an all clear an hour later. So, what are in our classroom first aid kits? Do they have tourniquets? Do we have trauma dressings? Do we have saline solution? and other supplies needed to maintain a gunshot wound until medics are allowed on the scene. And lastly, my question was, how can I help? How can I make sure that our teachers and staff are up to date with their CPR certifications, and how do we get better first aid kits into every classroom throughout our district? Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Prater, would you have someone from the staff contact Mrs. Smith and address those issues or answer her questions?
Yeah, I wrote down her questions. I will get her contact information.
Great.
And back up.
And Mrs. Smith, the contact information that you gave on here, okay, great.
Yes,
thank you very
correct.
Much.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board on an item that is not on the agenda? Yes, please come step up and state your name.
Hi. My name is Alexa Ford. I am a student at Moore Bay High School, and I'd like to start by saying thank you for allowing this platform for me tonight, and also to invite you to our event on March 24th in San Luis Obispo. It's March for Our Lives in protesting gun violence around the U.S., and especially in schools. So myself, along with Delaney Sigmund and Audrey McClish, who is filming right over there, are organizers for our school's walkout. On March 14th, we, along with countless other students, will be walking out of our classes to take action on the gun violence epidemic plaguing our schools and neighborhood. March 14th because it commemorates the one-month anniversary of the Parkland shooting. We're organizing this event to demand Congress pass legislation in order to keep us safe from gun violence in our schools, on our streets, in our homes, and everywhere. Students and staff shouldn't have to have the fear of being murdered in their classrooms or on the way home from school every time they stop on the campus. Parents should be able to send their kids to school in the mornings and be able to see them alive at the end of the day. We all have the right to live free from fear and violence in our communities. So please do more than just tweet thoughts and prayers. Please acknowledge the changes that need to be made. And please be the kind of leaders that can say they didn't just stand by and do nothing. This is a moment. This is not a moment. This is a movement. So what are you going to do to take a stand? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board? Yes, please come up and state your name.
Hi, my name is Marika Van Burden, and I've been at a few of these board meetings representing Mayor Heidi Harmon, and I did just want to say that I am here also in support of the Moms Against Gun Violence organization, and as well as Mayor Harmon, and we are willing to work with you guys on any issues regarding that. I know that Dr. Prater did say there's a study session coming up that we're planning to attend, that the public is welcome to attend, to know that what we can do as a community, and the mayor also wants to know what she can do to help to end gun violence in our schools on a local level.
Great, thank you. And for the public's information, the meeting she's talking about will be our study session. I believe it's March 15th at the district office in room J2 at 10 o'clock in the morning. And, of course, it's an open meeting, and everyone's welcome to attend. Let's move on to item number 8.01, business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes, so I have a couple items. You know, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers about every 5 years comes out, and they try to educate the public about the potential dangers on the coast, that the Baywood area, in particular in Montano de Oro, used to be a kind of a military site where they practiced during World War II. So everything from, you know, basically talking about munitions and what to do if you find them, you know, digging in the yard. And though they haven't found any, in a long time, there's still that possibility. So we are going to, they have a nice kind of newsletter, a kind of overview and history and information about it. So I'm going to have all of our principals put that in their newsletters, kind of share so that people understand and what those potential dangers are. So we'll do that. Pleased that Dave Houghton and our Prop 39 energy grant that we've kind of finalized that. We're going to be bringing some information to the board very soon about finishing our LED retrofits throughout the district. which is a huge energy savings for us, and utilizing those funds. So very, very excited about that. I did get the opportunity to share our LCAP presentation with the parent leaders last week. With Dr. Prater has his monthly meeting with parent leaders from all the schools. And so it was a very good meeting, I thought. Went over a lot of information. They had a lot of great questions. And so it was just nice to kind of hit the different groups and kind of explain what the LCAP is and how it affects our kids. And lastly, to kind of get them to complete the survey to get information back so that we can utilize that as we plan for future years. Safety, of course, is the topic of discussion, right? And for us, with principals, with schools, and so we are going to have our our key school architect, Gary Geary, is going to come to that study session and kind of educate the board on kind of the key things in terms of safety and architecture. And so he will be there to share that. And I think we're going to share safety plans and other information as well with our principals. Have our principals there that'll share safety plans as well.
Thank you very much. Let's move on to the educational services update. Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you. A couple things for you tonight. One is just to let you know that we've had a small team of staff members attending throughout the year an ongoing Equity Institute. So it's a topic that I know we're all passionate about how do we ensure that our students, every student, is achieving at the highest level, and what can we do to ensure equitable practices. So it's a topic that you'll begin to hear more about, and I just wanted to begin to let you know. Right now they're putting together kind of some action plans, and Mrs. Shields and I will be going over that and looking through what might be added either to our LCAP or within our other district action plans for next year. So just wanted to kind of drop that idea with you and think about how we are ensuring equitable practices within our district. And the other topic I wanted to bring up with you is, as you know, we have a foundation steering committee that's been meeting, and we're making great progress on formulating what a foundation could look like for our school district. We are going to ask perhaps at the next board meeting for an item to be added, because we're going to need a board member rep to serve on our foundation board, and it's about time to look to see who would be interested in that and look at serving in that capacity and to begin to meet with a group and serve on the board, as the foundation will have a separate board. So just wanted to plant that idea with you to begin thinking about that, and we will look at adding that to our next agenda.
Great. Thank you, Mrs. McGrath. Let's move on to item number 8.03, Measure D update. Pinkerton.
Yeah, just a couple things again. Study session coming up on the 15th. We are looking into, just for the board to know, in terms of when we go in and we modernize the cafeteria area at Morro Bay High School, the potential of utilizing a food truck for that site. So in lieu of spending a lot of money and through, fixing up a portable types of things, so Aaron Primer, our food service director, is looking at that option of utilizing a food truck for that, that then after Measure D construction could be something that could, venture around to the different school sites and could be another nice feature. And knowing Aaron Primer, I'm sure she will make it absolutely fantastic. So it actually becomes a low-cost option for us in terms of spending something on a temporary facility that we're going to tear down versus having something that potentially could be a long-term asset to the district. So that's one that we're excited about and looking into. We're finishing up our CT grants. So we've turned in everything for the first wave with OPSC. We're now kind of turned to the CTE side of those grants. And so this is to hopefully supplement our Measure D dollars. So we're excited about kind of moving forward with those for all of our career technical education projects at our two comprehensive high schools. And then lastly, Bellevue Santa Fe, right around the corner in terms of getting our GMP, working with the new principal and in kind of getting that project. So there's going to be kind of a tight timeline to get a lot done, but that's definitely something we're excited about, in that we were able to receive the matching grant funds to really do a lot of work. And I think it's going to be definitely a transformation on that campus and really update it. So excited about that.
Thank you very much. We're going to move on to three public hearings. First will be item 9.01, a public hearing on CSEA interests. Mrs. Newland.
Yes, so we're about to begin negotiations with our CSEA classified group. The contract comes to a close this year in June, and so we will be opening negotiations after this public hearing tonight. It will start in another week or two, and Jim Quisenberry is our board representative to that group. And so we will be negotiating with them between March and June of this year for the next successive three-year contract. So this is a public hearing that puts forward CSEA's interest in negotiations, and the following one is the board's interest in negotiations.
Thank you, Mrs. Newland. I will open the public hearing on item number 9.01, CSEA interests. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll close that public hearing. Mrs. Newland, 9.02.
Yes, so this is the board's interest for entering into negotiations. Same thing, it's a public hearing.
Okay, so I'm going to open the public hearing on item 9.02, the district's interest for CSEA negotiations. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board on that item? And seeing none, I'll close that public hearing. Let's move on to item... Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Quisenberry.
Mr. President, is it considered... our standard procedure to put those items up where people could see them, or is it not? I don't know. It's a question.
Typically, I would think they would be in the agenda. Are they available for the public?
Yeah, they're
in the packet.
Okay.
There's the boards right there, and previous to that was the CSEA. So
I why don't we just take a minute and let people just have a glance at that real quick? Thank you, Mr. Quisenberry.
And then there's...
Maybe just a short synopsis would be good. So the CSEA's interests are in looking at the contract language on overtime. They are interested in looking at the contribution that we provide to health benefits. They are interested in salary negotiations, step advancement, professional growth, bilingual premium, and extra duty pay for LVN paraeducators or those doing health services, creating a higher level paraeducator position and extending the work year for the elementary librarians. So those were their interests, and the district interests were listed on there. I have it with me. So our interests were to update the recognition section because it's out of date, to say which members are in the unit and which members are not in the unit, to clarify the appeals process for discipline, to look at our evaluation form. There was just a small little edit we'd like to make in that form. To clarify the use of personal business and vacation, and look at the supplemental vacation plan incentive, to negotiate health and welfare rates for part-time employees, and a reduction of the steps that are on the salary schedule and our premium pay. Those are the things that we were interested in.
Thank you very much. And I would just remind everybody that the agenda is developed, at least 72 hours before the meeting. And anybody that's interested can certainly go to our website, slcusd.org, and look up the school board tab, and you should be able to find a link to the agenda that we have. Let's move on to item number 9.03, public hearing on renewal of Bellevue Santa Fe charter.
Yeah, so we're going to be asking the board later in the agenda to approve the renewal of the charter. So we have a long-standing relationship with Bellevue Santa Fe Charter School, I believe since 1998 when they originated. And so this is just a public hearing on that behalf.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing on item 9.03, the renewal of the Bellevue Santa Fe charter. Is there anybody that would like to address the board during this public hearing? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. Let's move on to item number 10.01. This is a resolution number 10-17-18, Measure D Baywood Elementary Modernization Lease-Leaseback Project. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so we're ready to begin the modernization effort at Baywood Elementary School and to start that process. We would like to use the lease-leaseback delivery method, and so in order to move forward with that, and there's actually a contract for Wysong Construction Company later in the agenda, but we do need the board to pass the resolution for us to go ahead and enter into a lease-leaseback contract to make those improvements. So at Baywood Elementary in particular, we're looking at kind of the inside of the main building there and working with the staff to wall off the classrooms. Right now it's kind of an open, which in the 60s or 70s when they built the campus was probably the cool thing to have. But there's definitely a need or desire right now to kind of close those rooms off, have access points, fix up it needs a new roof, it needs paint, it needs new heating ventilation system throughout to kind of meet all those new rooms. So that's kind of the focus of our work there.
Thank you. Any questions from the board? Okay, I'm going to go to the public right now. Is there anybody that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing no one, I'll close that. Would someone like to make a motion on item number 10.01? Mr. Millar.
I would like to move approval of resolution number 10-17-18, supporting award of lease-leaseback agreement.
Great. Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Is there any further board discussion on this item? Mr. Buckman, did you have further discussion? Okay. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Mrs. Holmes, this is a roll call vote.
Mr. Millar? Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers? Mrs. Roger, passes 7-0.
Okay, let's move on to item number 10.02. This is also a resolution, number 11-17-18, Measure D appointment to the Citizens Bond Oversight Committee. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes, we had, of course, we have a Citizens Bond Oversight Committee. So all purchases, all expenditures are basically overseen by this group that meets quarterly to go over all of the kind of the budget projects, what we're doing, how the dollars are being spent, goes over the audit, all those types of things. So it has that kind of layer of protection that we have citizens overseeing on top of the board's oversight as well as the districts. So we did have one of our members, a parent member, that had stepped down. And so we have Dr. Kevin Parzik, who has agreed to join our Citizens Bond Oversight Committee. He is the chief medical officer for Wilshire Hospital and has two students that have come through I believe, Los Ranchos, Laguna, and now it's Lowell High School. So we're happy to have him on board, and I'll try to catch him up for what's been happening over the last couple of years, and then he'll join us in March for our next meeting.
Any questions from board members before I go to the public? Okay. Is there any member of the public that would like to address us on this item? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to bring it back to the board. Would anybody like to make a motion? Mr. Quisenberry?
I'll move resolution number 11-17-18.
And I'll second.
Motion by Mr. Quisenberry, a second by Mrs. Roger. Is there any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, Mrs. Holmes.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Okay. Now, let's move on to item number 11.01, charter renewal for Bellevue Santa Fe.
Yeah, I'm going to have Holly Warwick come up. She is the new principal of Bellevue Santa Fe, so taking over for longtime principal Brian Goetz, who actually, since his regrets tonight because he's in Catalina with the sixth graders, so poor guy. But so Holly, come on up. We'll just introduce you to the board and also the board president. So Mark Lebed is here as well. So I just wanted them to be recognized as we go through the next two agenda items. And so the first one is the actual charter renewal. So their board, their staff has gone through this process. You could see all the kind of backdrop and all the things that they have to write up themselves in order to kind of come around and go forward with it, this charter renewal process. And so there's a lot that goes into it. In particular for us, I would say, as a district, we do have oversight over them to ensure that, you know, fiduciarily, that their students are achieving, that the school is being run well. And so by all accounts, Bellevue is a high-achieving, well-functioning place for kids, and so we definitely support the renewal of the charter based on everything that we've seen and in visiting the school and in talking to Brian, and so we definitely support the, their efforts in renewing this charter tonight. Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you. All the high schoolers are taller than me. On behalf of Mark and I, and he might want to come and talk as well, I just want to thank you so much for even considering renewal, because this is a school that we truly believe in. And Sam, the relationship with San Luis Coastal is so valuable. And I am a newer principal, and I rely so much on the expertise and the past history. And I've just been welcomed, truly welcomed, and given so much support in that process with information and willingness and acceptance. So we are thrilled to be here, and we're thrilled to be part of San Luis Coastal. Truly honored. And I'm from Cayucas Elementary, so I'm one of you.
Any questions from board members? Okay. Is there any, this is an action item, is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Buckman, I bet you're going to make a motion, aren't you?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to accept the charter renewal and the work that was done to prepare this, and I really thank you guys.
And I'd like to second.
So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mrs. Roger. Is there any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries 7-0. Congratulations. But I think we have a second part here, so don't go away.
Now
we
the
need
deal,
to talk about that.
Right? Yeah. That was all nice, but now
the
it's
memorandum
the deal.
Of understanding. Yeah, no, so, Mr. Pinkerton.
Again, we have a great relationship. Mr. Getz, you know, we did a lot of work on this MOU 5 years ago. So as they kind of were venturing, becoming an independent charter and taking over special education and kind of moving forward, you know, there's a lot that was in the air. So Mr. Getz and myself sat down. We kind of went through the MOU. We made some revisions. Gave that to Lozano Smith to go over to make sure that all of the new charter rules and laws and that everything was kind of in line in terms of the entire MOU itself. And so this is the product that you have in front of you in terms of what those modifications are. So not a lot changed. Not a lot changed. But now they are functioning as their own, you know, taking over their own special ed program and part of the SELPA now and in all those areas. So we do, you know, they do receive that school site for $1 a year. So there is an oversight fee that is tied in this time in terms of this MOU that we worked on. And I see us working probably a lot more with the new principal, with Holly, in terms of helping her and helping the school site to make sure that they're meeting all the, you know, educational needs that they need to and all the legal requirements, because they're still part of the education code and have to follow all the rules and laws and regulations. So we'll definitely be working kind of hand in hand to make sure that all those things are taken care of. But we felt good about the MOU itself and kind of where we're headed, and I don't expect any, you know, issues over the next 5 years, and really excited about the Measure D work that's going to be done at the site.
Great. Is there any questions from the board? I want to say that I really want to applaud you and the district for the specificity of the MOU. You probably don't know this, but I was chair of a charter school task force with the California School Boards Association, and one of the concerns that we expressed in our findings was the lack of specificity, the lack of oversight, the lack of accountability, the lack of information on student achievement, the lack of participating in open meetings. And I think all of those things were addressed in your charter renewal, and I just want to tell you that I was really, really happy to see it, and I just want to wish you well and continued success over at Bellevue Santa Fe. So actually, I'd like to make that motion. I'd like to move approval of the Memorandum of Understanding. Would someone like to second that? Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Any other discussion from board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Congratulations.
And again, most of the Bellevue kids are our kids, right? Because they come to us in 7th and 8th grade and throughout. So it's good. Thank you.
Great. Let's move on to item number 11.03, approve community outreach communication plan. Dr. Prater?
Yes. As you know, in December, the Blue Ribbon Committee that I put together the previous spring to provide recommendations to me regarding the best way to proceed given the loss of revenue from the Diablo Canyon closure. And their recommendations laid out several really critical frames that allow us to now navigate through and gather feedback on. This outreach plan is my commitment to follow through with those recommendations or those suggestions. And it's really about public engagement. So the long and short of this is the goal of this plan that I'm asking for your adoption tonight for is to reach out and engage the targeted groups that represent our key stakeholders and to really find a way to gather their input, hear their ideas, and be willing to just listen. And so my goal is to spend the months of March and April gathering that feedback. And this plan provides that outline, and it provides hopefully some clarity about our objectives. And so the ultimate goal is that between our employees, our parent groups, our labor groups, and the community at large, business community, as well as the citizens that represent San Luis Coastal, will have an opportunity to provide us feedback. And I will gather that feedback and create a survey as well for people to then go back and complete. And we will compile all that information so that the board can have that information at its disposal during their summer planning session. So that what you will have is really a great idea of what the different groups think, what their ideas were, what their opinions were, and I believe the ability to synthesize that information will give us a more clear direction in the following year about what we need to do in the next 3 to 5 years to keep our budget strong while we lose that revenue. And so that's what this is to provide that level of clarity. It is put forward the way it is so that the public can, when they ask, well, how are you going to reach out to us? What does that look like? And then you can point to this document and say, this is what the board adopted. This is what we'd like to do. So that's what I have here tonight for your consideration.
Mr. Quisenberry, followed by Mr. Buckman.
Dr. Prater, just when you provide some of the information for these meetings, my request would be that when you talk about surplus property or properties owned by the district, I think it's important that the public knows where those properties are and their approximate size and location and so forth. So I would request that be made available to them. I think also how the presently closed school sites are being utilized, what revenues are from those sites and so forth.
Okay, Mr. Buckman.
Yes. Yeah. First of all, I want to thank you for working on this. This is it's just so important that the community continue to understand and to be involved in what's going on. This impacts so much more than just the school district. The closure of Diablo is just, and the effect that our schools have on it. But also, I'd like to ask: is there a plan to keep this as a circle, to make it a loop, so that whatever comes in as information to us is also shared back with either at least the people that participate or the entire community?
That's an excellent question, and my intention is to take this feedback and have a dedicated site on our website where people can click to it. And we've already done that with Measure D. There's an icon that we created, and it has all the information on the public board meetings, all the documents that we have collected, the media responses, all of the CPUC work that was done and continues to be done. When I go out and gather this information, myself and the staff do that, I intend to utilize a similar process where we just put that information right up there. And when the board has a chance to sit with that information and provide me with direction, then I can then, my intention is to then identify what those things are that you want me to do, and I will then reflect that back up on the website as next steps. So that's that way we keep it completely transparent.
Okay, thank you. Great. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go to the public. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this item? Mrs. Neuhauser.
Hello, Judy Neuhauser, Los Osos. I'm really pleased that there's going to be public meetings, Los Osos, Moore Bay, and San Luis. I'm wondering if there's a way that the public can get access to not just like a one-page summary of the budget, but a really detailed budget that, at you know, what's spent where, what's spent at different elementary schools, what's spent at the district office, what's spent on administrative. I know at one point we had looked at the part of the pie that was the benefits, and I would personally like to see that broken down into the CSEA, the CTA, and then administrative. And when I was looking at one of your budget things, it had CSA administrative, and it had CSA certified, and it had, so there was certificated administrative. So there needs to be a little bit more clarity as to what those things actually mean. And are those administrative certified, is that counted as administrative, or is it counted as certificated salary? So just a little more transparency on some of that would really help those of us who are really trying to dig into this and figure out where actually is our money going and where actually can we have meaningful input on cuts that are going to have to be made. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'm going to bring it back to the board. This is an action item. Would someone like to make a motion on this?
I would move to approve the community outreach communications plan.
Okay, we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by...
And I would strongly like to second this. I think this is a great way to go.
Mr. Buckman? Okay, cool. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for vote. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 11.04. This is a discussion item, secondary mid-year achievement report. This will be Jennifer O'Hagan, who I happen to know loves basketball, and Kimberly McGrath.
Thank you. Thank you. Mrs. O'Hagan and I are happy to discuss secondary common assessments that have been given so far this year in both English language arts and mathematics. There we go. So first of all, the common assessments that exist for our middle schools and high schools are in English language arts and in mathematics. So in English language arts, there has been a great process that has happened. With a lot of teacher input and teacher buy-in, we've created common assessments that are given across both of our middle schools and across all three of our high schools, so that teachers have actually arrived at this place where they look forward to giving the assessments. They're valuing the information, and they are looking forward to sitting down together, digesting the information, and doing actions at an individual student level and at a group level in order to use this information in a productive way. So we've come a long way, I think, with secondary teachers, and have implemented that, and I appreciate your direction and support in that. Tonight, so far, the teachers have given narrative at this point of the year. At the end of the year, we will follow up with the informational as well as argumentative. And in mathematics, they've completed the first task, and then at the end of the year, we'll share the second task. This is just a one sample of the data cycle process that we are utilizing. And Jen has a copy of the process that we're using as well, so she'll pass out a paper copy in a minute of the next one if that's easier for you to see. But this is just an example of a high school math. And so what you can see is that on the left side, there's a link for teachers. The type of assessment that is given is outlined there for teachers. The link to the exact assessment is there. Teachers use a formative-summative pattern. So what that means is they give two assessments before they expect a student to completely have mastered the topic. So it's kind of that check-in for a teacher to say, where are you in your understanding? How can I adjust my instruction and adjust what I'm doing for students before the final summative assessment? Okay, so this is a great conversation opportunity for teachers to be able to speak with other master teachers that teach in the same area and to be able to say, what can we do for students before we are finished and working towards that summative assessment? You can see that the assessment window is outlined and everyone follows, gives the assessment within this exact window. The deadline to enter the information into Illuminate, which is our data management system that houses that information. Then the data cycle TCT. This is probably the most important column. This is the date that the teachers sit down together and have a discussion around what they see. We all know that one of the most powerful things that can happen is for teachers to not just digest that information themselves, but to sit down with other experts and to say, what are we noticing? What can we do about it? So that is a common calendared time that we kind of hold sacred for teachers to be able to use that information and be productive with that time. And then you will see that only the summative ones are then used to show progress, and that's what we demonstrate to you. We wouldn't bring forward formative assessment as it gives a strange perception, right? We don't expect students to have mastered the information at that point. The next document, you have a paper copy there if it's a little easier to see, but this is a tool that is used to guide teachers' conversation that they have when they sit down together. So this is actually a digital tool, is even a better use of it. It has links directly to Illuminate. So it takes them exactly to reports that are housed within our digital management system that give them tons of information. How did students do on specific standards? Have students master the standard or not? Which students? Down to an individual student level. Which students are at which level? Who needs what type of help in what area, and what can we do about it? You can see that teachers go through looking at what can I do to adjust our instruction? Are there any adjustments to the curriculum that's needed? Are there adjustments to the assessment that is needed? And what is our growth and what's our goal setting related to this? So this document has been utilized through all of our middle schools, all three of our high schools, with every content teacher. And this is the common way, kind of a common protocol and a common conversation in order to ensure that the conversation stays productive. So we did have an August PD around this. I want to give some kudos to Ms. O'Hagan. She worked closely with teachers and really worked on this document, worked with Illuminate to make sure that we were incorporating it and it wasn't seen as something separate. Illuminate has been so impressed by it that other districts are now utilizing this data cycle and process as well, because it's outlined and clean and helps to make that conversation clean. So nice job, Jen. The next part, so I'm going to hand it over to Ms. O'Hagan, and she's going to go through the English Language Arts common assessment that it's been given so far. I also want to tell you that what you're going to see tonight is you're going to see the assessment directly reported from the summative assessment. You're not going to see comparative data. Okay, I tell you that because all of us want to see comparative data. All of us are wanting and hungry to see what has happened over time, where our students, what have they shown, what growth have they shown, and we are really on the path to getting there. We're just not there yet. We had English Language Arts data from last year, but it's not the exact same piece, and it has some different components. Jen and I looked and looked at it and really wanted, like, is there a way to show this as comparison? But to tell you the truth, it's not clean enough to be able to show you. It's definitely our goal. Teachers want to see that as well. It's the goal for all of us. We're just not quite there yet. So we've made it really clear with English teachers and math teachers that they have, we're ready for it to be consistent, right? We're ready for to be able to look at that growth over time. And that in one way, the process has been, you know, it's kind of a struggle for us that we kind of want it to be there. On the other hand, I wouldn't sacrifice the teacher buy-in, the teacher input, and also the adjustments that they have made to these assessments to ensure that it's aligned with their curriculum. So those parts are super valuable, and I wouldn't give that up for just getting some comparison data. So I feel like we're at a great baseline point now, and I think from now on we'll be able to see more comparative and some more longitudinal type of information. So just wanted you to understand what you'll see and what you won't see tonight. So we'll start with English language arts, and then we'll move on to mathematics, and then I'll close at the end to talk about kind of our accomplishments, next steps, and where we'll go with this.
Good evening. So yeah, this next part of the presentation, I'm going to go over English language arts in middle school and high school. And you'll see, like Kim said, one of the three common assessments that they'll be giving this year. We'll be looking at narrative writing on these next two slides. Oops. This way. Okay. So we combined the two middle schools, and so we're showing data for all 7th and 8th grade students, as well as their subpopulations. So if you look at the labels on the bottom here, you'll see the different student populations, and the number in parentheses indicates the total number of students in that group. Okay. You'll see our student groups. We're showing all students, non-SED, SED, English learners, RFEP, and SWD, students with disabilities. Okay, so what we can notice here is that 68% of our students, of all students, met or exceeded the standard in middle school narrative writing. Okay, and this is similar to English SBAC results that we saw last year, and so this can be used as an early indicator toward meeting or exceeding expectations on the SBAC. Okay, achievement gap between non-SED and SED does exist. So if you look at these next two bars here, our non-SED was 76% that met or exceeded the standard, and our SED students were 52%. So there is a little bit of a gap here, 24 percentage points. And then when you look over at our English learners, their numbers aren't surprising because they're not expected to show proficiency in writing while they're learning the language, while they're learning the English language. But in spite of that, 26% of them met or exceeded the standard. And then we look at our students who've been redesignated as fluent English proficient, and there's 55% of them that have met or exceeded the standard. A little bit of a gap there when you look at RFEP versus all of our students. And then we have our students with disabilities, 35% have met or exceeded the standard. So looking at this slide, two targeted groups I can see right here would be the SED and the RFEP. Okay, we'd like to close that achievement gap. Sites are discussing goals and actions around these students. They're looking at them individually, monitoring progress, and implementing interventions with the help of the data cycle reflection tool that you have in front of you. Okay. So this is the same slide, but now we're showing high school. Okay, we're showing data for all students, again, as well as the subpopulations. And here you'll see all of our 9th through 12th graders, and they took a narrative assessment. They are using the SBAC rubric as to grade these assessments. The teachers are getting together, looking at the assessments, and scoring them. So what we notice here, it's even more impressive. We see more growth here. The overall performance in high school is higher. 76% of all students have met or exceeded the expectation of narrative writing. When you look at the next two bars, non-SED and SED, there is an achievement gap. EL, 44%, so a little bit higher than middle school. They have met or achieved standard. And RFEP, 65% is meeting or exceeding standard, another little gap there between RFEP and all. And then our students with disabilities are at 32%. Okay. So again, on this slide, we see that our two target groups would be our SCD students and our RFEP students. High schools are really focusing more on instructional strategies. They're working specifically on ELD strategies and utilizing the data that they're finding and that they're gathering from these data talks. English teachers are working with their grade level partners. They're analyzing the common assessment data. They're sharing strategies. They're looking at whole group, small group instruction, making adjustments, and then they're setting goals. Okay. All right, so let's look at mathematics. So this is going to be the same format that you just saw. We're going to look at the first of the two mathematics tasks that we'll be giving this year. Okay, these have been aligned to the curriculum. Teachers will be both looking at both middle school and high school students. Teachers have really focused a lot on these this year, on making them, like Kim said, and refining them to make them useful in their instruction. Whoops, wrong way. Okay, so blue is our math. So here's the two middle schools, and again, we're showing data for all 7th and 8th grade students, along with the subpopulations that we saw earlier. Okay. So again, results are similar to what we saw earlier in middle school ELA. 68% of all 7th and 8th grade students met or exceeded standards on their first math task this year. When we look at the next two bars, the non-SCD and SCD, there is an achievement gap. Our English learners at 44%. Again, it's lower than the other, but that they are learning English, and we know now that students are not simply computing equations, but they're being asked to read and analyze items in order to solve mathematical problems. So there's quite a bit of English required in these math tasks. Our RFEP group performed at 61%. They've met or exceeded the standard. Again, a 7 percentage point gap there between RFEP and all students. And then 53% of our students with disabilities met or exceeded the standard. So again, we see kind of a pattern here. Two targeted groups are the SCD students and the RFEP students. Sites are discussing goals and actions around these students, and again, they're looking at them individually, and they're monitoring progress, utilizing that tool that you see in front of you. Okay, moving on to high school mathematics. Okay, this was the combined high schools, and here we're showing data for all students enrolled in Algebra 1, Algebra 2, and Geometry, and again, their subpopulations. Okay. What we notice here, 58% of all students met or exceeded the standard on task one. When we look again at non-SCD and SCD, there is a gap again. EL students, 33% have met or exceeded the standard. 46% of our RFEP students have met or exceeded the standard. And so again, there's a gap between RFEP and our all students. And then 40% of our students with disabilities met or exceeded the standard. Okay. So we're seeing that these trends are following the same path as in the previous slides. The two targeted groups, again, would be SCD and RFEP. And again, high schools, like I said earlier, have focused on instructional strategies, including work with English learners, targeting small group instruction, large group instruction, what they can do differently with their students. I've actually sat in some of these data talks myself, and it's been very interesting. The data cycle has really provided the teachers with a roadmap, I think, to using the student assessments to influence instruction. We've always had data. Well, we've had achievement data for quite a while now, but the conversations that the teachers are having are different. They're new, they're inspiring. Teachers are taking risks and talking with each other about data, about students that may be struggling and what they can do to help. It's also, I've noticed that there's been a positive shift with the teachers using this data now in a meaningful way, using this tool. They thought they used to think it was just for the board, but now they're actually using the data consistently. They're having structured conversations, which I think is what they needed. They kind of needed a guide. And they're taking more ownership of these assessments. So I think they're more invested in the results and what they mean for instruction in the classroom. So with that, I'm going to let Kim talk about the conclusions.
Great. So what we've accomplished, let's look at that first. So we have created consistent common assessments with teacher feedback and teacher input, developed common calendars that are used throughout all five of the schools, a common data cycle protocol, as well as aligning our assessments with SBAC and really looking at how to align that with curriculum. I think that's been a great step forward. We have discovered that we are achieving at either similar or improved levels when you look at how students score related to SBAC. A little hard to compare it when it comes to high school, because remember, only 11th grade takes SBAC assessment at high school. So it's a little hard when we have 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders taking the common assessments, and the state only has 11th graders taking SBAC. So it's not a great, perfect comparison, but kind of one of the best that we have of kind of what is our dipstick and what's our check along the way if students are headed where they needed to head, or do we need interventions and things to supplement that learning. There continues to be an achievement gap, right? And that's part of the equity talk that I talked about before, and that is the work that we all need to continue to focus on. How are we ensuring that every single student is reaching their maximum potential? Students that are economically disadvantaged and our fluent English proficient students need our continued focus, and that is exactly what we're aiming towards at our school sites. So next steps, aligning that to curriculum is what teachers have done and are really finishing that work up. Supporting our data talks and data cycles as teachers work to make those productive, we want to support their work in that. Creating a progress monitoring system. There's these components in place, and we've really made big strides with it, but I want it to get to a place that it's just a natural part of what we do. So kind of finishing up that system is a great next step. And then that final achievement report in June, and like I said, continuing to look at what is the longitudinal look at growth and how can we continue to look at that is an obvious next goal for us as well. So happy to take any questions.
Mr. Pleasantberry.
Thank you, Ms. McGrath. I have a question about the high school math, just the common assessment, and going back to that chart, if you will. Correct me if I'm wrong. The students that, let's say, are very accelerated, let's say they're taking Algebra 2 or trig, pre-calculus, what have you, they would not be on this assessment, or would they?
It's a good point. Algebra 1, Geometry, and Algebra 2 are the only ones assessed. As those are the ones that students generally take, and after that there begins to be not as required and a lot of different options. So you're right that the most accelerated and the juniors and seniors that are taking high levels of math are not in this data.
Thank you.
Mr. Bruckman.
Test?
Yeah.
Okay. For the third time. Two quick questions. So on these charts, we have SED and EL. Are those unduplicated? So if somebody's SED and EL, are we seeing those?
They would show in both columns.
They would show in both columns. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I just want to make sure I understood on the conclusions, Kimberly. And can you put, mine's not showing up here. Can you pull the last slide up? Thank you, Kim. I can't see it on my... I have bad internet connection. Yeah, I'm having troubles, too. Kimberly?
There it goes.
So on the final one, on the steps there, and I just want to make sure I understood. So in June, we will see longitudinal data, or are we not expecting to see it this year?
it's going to be tough to get it for this year. I would expect to see, be able to see growth information for next year. I don't think we'd be able to gather it for June.
Okay, thanks.
Catherine.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for this report. I believe it's a pretty well accepted belief that any kind of achievement tests like SAT tests and GRE tests and these tests, I'm sure as well, have a direct correlation to household income because of the richness of the language and the interaction between adults and children, perhaps. I don't know that we know that, but that does seem to be the trend. And I'm just curious to know whether in the work that you're doing with our SAT students, if you've had any insights, do you have any ideas of where we might be able to go to try to close that gap? I see that we're working with integrating them into classrooms where they're engaging in rich conversations about these subjects with other students. But is there anything else that came out of your work? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an excellent and complicated answer. So if there was one reason, if it was just lack of vocabulary development that kept students that were socioeconomically disadvantaged from achieving at the same or higher level, it would be an easy solution for us to work towards. There's many reasons why students that are socioeconomically disadvantaged have additional obstacles. And it's our duty to figure out per individual student what is it that they need, what holes exist there that we need to fill. Is it complicated family issues that are getting in the way? Is it emotional trauma? Is it misunderstandings to begin with? Is it vocabulary development, right? What are the obstacles that are keeping that student from succeeding? And what can we do as a school and as a, you know, family team, you know, with us to say, what is the issue and how can we work to solve that? I wish it was one singular issue and we would all be able to solve it tomorrow. But I would tell you from elementary principals that Mrs. Shields leads, they absolutely look at what are the obstacles and what can we do to make sure that we're addressing each one of them. And we've had those fantastic discussions with secondary principals as well. And I know that the teachers are working towards how can we create relationships? How can we look at emotionally and socially supporting students? How can we look at their academic goals, and what can we do as a school site to try to address those to help them be successful?
Well, thank you for it's a gnarly problem, and thanks for addressing it.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. It really is a big problem. Going back to the teacher collaboration time that is allowed for teachers to go over this data and work together, how is that time created? How long do they have, and are we bringing in substitutes? How is that being achieved?
Yeah, those meetings generally occur during our TCT time, which is during the late start Monday time. So they calendar when students come late on Mondays, teachers are meeting together. And it's obviously not each time, but they have scheduled during those Monday morning times. And you saw like on the calendar there where they have those set times and then they meet to discuss it during that time. So it doesn't require substitute time, but it is a valuable use of time during usually about an hour of that time for them to be able to bring data, to use the information through Illuminate, analyze it, and have those discussions.
So if teachers are noticing at the elementary level, or certainly have awareness there, that SED students are our largest struggling group, and then as they move through middle school and into high school, I'm wondering how much time is when they have the TCT time and they're discussing their the outcomes of this of the testing, how much time is there really for them to discuss how are we going to reach those students, that particular group of students? I mean, it's just such a hard problem to solve. Mm-hmm. But are we allowing enough time, I guess, is my question, for collaboration between teachers to really come up, mm-hmm. to be able to I've lost it. I mean, I don't know how to fix it.
I understand what you're saying.
For teachers to fix it, that's what
right,
I'm
saying. I know. I understand what you're saying, yeah. This? And I would say that also it's not just during that collaboration time. This is discussed in staff meetings. This is discussed, you know, in SST meetings, right, where they're meeting, a whole team of people meeting to discuss one individual student and why they're struggling. This is an ongoing conversation, and this is our work. You know, I'm not, you know, it's one of those goals that you put out there, and we will always continue to work. And I think that's what drives a lot of us and why we chose this profession, right, is because it's our goal and our mission for every student to excel. But it is a complicated issue, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And I think you have people in place that look at the time that this board has given to collaboration. Look at that investment, right, of how much you know, Monday morning time, staff meetings, look how much time has been invested in that. It speaks volumes of that we value people working together to solve this. So people have their eye on it and are doing the good work.
It just seems like every time we look at this data, the RFEPs, I'm always really aware that the RFEPs are coming up, and I feel really excited and happy about that. But they're coming up to where the SED students are. So our English language learners are lower, but Mr. Muller's right with his stage aside that sometimes they are even higher. The RFEPs are higher than SED. But it's just I want so much to see see greater change, and I know everyone does.
Mm-hmm. It's complicated, like I said. If it was easy, the whole nation would have it solved, right?
Absolutely.
It is a complicated topic, and we're dedicated to sticking with it.
Well, thank you for your efforts.
Great. Anybody else from the board? Are there any comments from the public about this item? Mrs. Neuhauser, followed by, actually, go ahead. Yeah. Come on up. Just tell us your name, please.
Hi, my name is Anna Massey.
Can you hang on just a second, Anna? There we go.
My name is Anna Massey, and I'm the EL specialist at Del Mar. I wasn't prepared to speak today, but you mentioned something, Mrs. Rogers, regarding what I do at Del Mar, being that Del Mar is a 60% Title I school now. How to bridge that gap, or what to do, you know, to ensure that maybe our RFEP kids, our SED kids, our EL kids get the experiences. You're talking about the research that has been done, that it's the income, family income. I believe something that we can do is to provide opportunities for some of our kids, our SED kids, our EL kids. If you think about what some of our kids with higher incomes do after school hours, they are in basketball, they are in violin class, and I'm speaking because my daughters do that. But that all comes from money. Our schools that are Title I schools, parents do not have that money. So I feel that we as a school, as a learning institute, if we provide these opportunities as a school where we have the arts, we have the many different things that you do after school hours, during school hours for our kids, or provide some of our money that comes to our schools that are Title I to have after school programs where kids do not have to pay for it. And maybe that comes up where you learn the language, the vocabulary that comes for specific Tier 1 or Tier 2 to Tier 3 vocabulary that kids will get. So to answer your question, doing some of that kind of activities or opportunities to provide for our kids.
Great. Thank you, Mrs. Massey. Mrs. Neuhauser?
I'm really glad Mrs. Massey spoke first, because I'm going to follow up on that. One of the things I think we need to look at as a district for budget is this. All students who are SED students in the district qualify as Title I, but the money only goes to the elementary schools. Okay? So in Los Osos, for instance, the Title I qualified students that are at the sixth grade, that are at this middle school, don't get any Title I money. That money is going, is being spread out through the other elementary schools. So if you really want to deal with Del Mar students, the sixth graders especially, and the high school, both Morro Bay and Los Osos Middle School are title, should be called Title I schools. They would qualify. But they get no money because the district has made the decision that they're going to do the front loading in the elementary schools, but not realizing that those kids are still Title I. They're still SED at middle school and high school, and we're not providing them necessarily that financial support. The other thing that I think you need to realize is there are two magnet schools in this district, which is Teach and Pacheco, and they both have some of the richest PTAs in the entire district. Those magnet schools are pulling our high-income people out of the other schools, and we see it in Los Osos and we see it in Morro Bay. And that means that our PTAs are losing the high funding of those students. So when you're talking budget, if you're really wanting to provide those more opportunities, because I agree, there's a lot of research that shows not necessarily summer school, read and math, but the enrichment, the ability to see what else is out there in the world and develop the vocabulary around that, develop the understanding of what that means as motivation, is hugely important for those students. So I think for these students, I know at elementary we call them school-dependent children because they aren't getting the support from their homes. If we're going to help them along, they're school dependent. We have to be able to provide those kinds of opportunities for them. I had one question about the data on the high school. I'm having a very difficult time understanding why 7th and 8th grade are lumped together and why Algebra 1, Algebra 2, and Geometry are lumped together. When you get data for the elementaries, it's 4th grade, 5th grade, 6th grade. So I don't understand why the data is being lumped at the high school level. I'm not sure what you truly get from that. So I'd just like to be able to have access at least to the data.
Thank you, Mrs. Neuhaus. Your 3 minutes are up.
It's not those together.
Perhaps Mrs. McGrath can answer those questions for you. Thank you. Okay. Let's move on to item number 11.05, board appointment to district health care committee. Dr. Prater?
Yes. I wanted to, in the spirit of getting in front of a bigger conversation about saving resources and really examining our costs, healthcare is a big component of our district's budget. And it's an important piece to our budget as it ties to employee wellness. That said, Mrs. Newland has taken on the charge of putting together a multi-dimensional representative committee that will examine ways in which we could conserve, maybe redirect resources, maybe look at things a little differently with regard to our health care that we offerings in our district. That said, this committee will likely last well over a year. It's that complicated. It will represent all members of our district employee groups, including the board. And so what I'm asking tonight is for the board to identify one of its members to represent that subcommittee on healthcare and be willing and able to participate. I believe the meetings will begin relatively soon in the spring and last well into a year. So Mrs. Newland has more of the details, but I am looking for a board representative to be representing on that committee.
So I know that Mrs. Sheffer has indicated an interest in doing this. With the board's permission, can we appoint her to that?
Yes, do you want to second to that?
I don't know. Do we need are you asking this to be an action item?
No, typically we don't officially act on it. I'm just asking if you just typically tell me who that person would be.
So by consensus?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So do we have a consensus? Mark? Okay, thank you. Thanks, Mrs. Sheffer, I think.
You're welcome, I think.
Mrs. Sheffer said you're welcome, I think. Thank you. Let's move on to item number 11.06, proposed revisions to bylaws of the board meeting conduct. This is another reading of this, and this will be presented by Mrs. McGrath.
Sorry, I wasn't already jumping up here. Yes, tonight we have the second reading of the board bylaw. Notice that your input last time was a suggestion of adding board president or designee. So that suggestion is noted. Otherwise, it is the same as what you saw at the previous meeting.
Okay. Any questions from the board about this item? Seeing none, I'll go to the public. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address us on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. Would somebody like to make a motion?
I would.
Mr. Millar.
I move approval of board policy 9323.
Okay.
Did I get that right?
Someone like to make a... Mr. Quisenberry seconds that. So we have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mr. Quisenberry. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 11.07. I believe this is the first reading of proposed revisions to board policy 5145.9, students' hate-motivated behavior. Mrs. McGrath.
Thanks. Also, our awesome IT department was thinking that that might get approved, so this is what it would likely be from now on, so it seems pretty easy to implement, ready to go. So on the next one, board policy, hate-motivated behavior, we did receive information from Gamut, as you will see noted in red, and some of the paragraph there in purple is noted from the board subcommittee. Some of the additions you see are really, it's kind of a clarification that the suggestion was that any student or a parent or guardian of a student who feels that a student is the victim of a hate-motivated behavior could report this. I think the thought process from your subcommittee was that for especially our youngest students, it might be a parent that received that information and might be better at being the one that's reporting the incident. Also, you would see that just some clarity was added in the next sentence. A complaint must be filed not later than 6 months. So just added a little clarification there from the date it occurred. This is the first reading, so feel free to either approve or to move this forward to a second reading.
Okay. So is there any board, Mr. Quisenberry?
Yeah, my question about the use of the word a complaint must be filed is will this be the same as a uniform complaint or different or equal to what have you?
Do I remember right as uniform complaint 6 months as well? It's the same.
Thank you.
Mr. Millar?
My question about the 6 month, it's kind of like a statute of limitations. Would we really want to cut off information about a student being subjected to hate behavior just because they didn't file the complaint within 6 months?
Yeah, that discretion's up to the board. I think part of the thought is that at some point you lose the details and you may not be able to recall the incident with all the facts.
Well, I think it would be great to file it within 6 months. I'm just trying to – my question is, would we preclude receiving information because they didn't – what if it's 6 months and one day? I mean, this is the kind of stuff I deal with, statute of limitations. But was the attempt to make complaint synonymous with the Williams process, that complaint? Because this seems to be a different species of complaint to me.
Mm-hmm.
This is more about specific behavior directed toward a student.
Mm-hmm. I could see that.
So I'm not sure that it needs to go through some formal complaint. I do think the rest of the paragraph is good as far as requiring immediate contact with the principal or designee and all those things. I just wouldn't want to cut off you know, I just wouldn't want to have cut off the information just because it does fit within some arbitrary schedule.
Mm-hmm. So. Do you suggest a different timeline, or are you suggesting not having a timeline?
I'd leave it open-ended.
Could it, Mark, do you have a, you sat in on the...
Yeah, I just, if I can, Kimberly.
Mm-hmm.
So, Walter, and not that it means that the board has to do it, but the 6 month is part of what the federal law and the state uniform complaint procedure is on complaints about discrimination. I'm not saying that the board has to do that, but I think that's where the thought of 6 months came from. Just for clarification.
Okay, Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. In my reading of this, it felt awkward. A complaint must be filed not later than 6 months from the date it occurred, that the complaint occurred. I think perhaps it should read the date of occurrence. Mm-hmm. And then in the next paragraph, staff who receive notice of hate-motivated behavior or personally observe such behavior shall immediately notify the principal, superintendent, or designee, and law enforcement as appropriate. I think it needs to be more clearly spelled out, the steps that staff take. That's confusing to me. Is a PE teacher who notices something to notify the principal, the superintendent, and possibly law enforcement? Or is their obligation to notify their principal?
I'm just curious, is that something that would be addressed in the ARs?
Mm-hmm. Typically, the AR would give more specificity about the each step and, you know, more specific information. I don't have the AR in front of me, I don't believe, but that's something that we could look at to make sure. But I guess it would be up to the board to decide if even that sentence caused confusion, that then the AR, you know, may need to be adjusted.
If the AR really clarifies it for staff, then I imagine it's okay to have it in here like this, because the AR is really the action plan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. Kresenberg.
I just wanted to say that I support Ms. Rogers' correction in as far as the English and the reading goes in terms
from the date of occurrence.
Of date of occurrence.
Thank you.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the public to see if there's anybody that would like to make a comment on that. Then I'll bring it back to the board to see if we have a consensus on this. I'm assuming we're going to bring this back because calling this the first reading, we'll bring it back next meeting. Is there anybody that would like to address us on this item? Okay. Seeing no one, I'd like to try to get some consensus from the board on Mr. Millar's suggestion that we eliminate the 6 month, essentially what you called statute of limitations, and then also the suggestion for the English, the grammatical changes that are suggested to be made. So I'd like to tackle the first one. Mr. Millar has suggested that we probably don't want to foreclose complaints within 6 months. So I'd like to see how the board feels about that and see if there's a consensus to change that language. So if you have an interest in that, would you kind of give me either let me know or give me a thumbs up on that, please? I could support that.
You mean eliminate those sentences?
Well, we could
Mr. Miller,
we could replace it with language that suggests the complaint should be made as soon as possible. I just don't think we need to cut it off at 6 months.
So there's that sentence, the immediately preceding sentence about may file a complaint in accordance with district complaint procedures. Is that enough for you? Are you suggesting we completely eliminate the sentence in following that in purple?
Yeah, I think that.
Which would then moot the English difficulties as well.
There you go.
But that's. I'm just trying to clarify your.
No, I would be fine with that.
Okay. Mr. Quisenberry,
well, which goes back to my question. District complaint procedures generally follow the uniform complaint procedure.
That's what it says here.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, then we're back to
6 months.
6 months.
Well, is it? I guess my question, Mark, can I just say something real quick?
Oh, yeah.
So my
please.
Question is: Are we saying this is a uniform complaint procedure? This would be a uniform complaint, which I'm assuming is within the 6-month time period. However, someone would still be able to file a complaint outside of that time. Is that okay, Mr. Buckman? I'm sorry.
So I'm just grappling with this because if district complaint procedures is the uniform complaint procedure, that's a state guideline, and I'm
right.
not sure whether I think staff would need to help on this. I'm not sure whether it's state law or it's just a guideline. So
okay.
And we, as I understand it, we have the authority to be more stringent. So I'm not negating Walters. I just need to, for my clarity, just need to understand where the uniform complaint procedure come from, how high up, because some of it's all the way to the federal level.
Okay. So can I make a suggestion that we refer this back to the board subcommittee for the kind of research that you're talking about, with the board's preference that we not foreclose people's ability to file complaints outside of the 6 months?
If I may, I'm just going to observe that federal and state law is not going to keep the school board from hearing information about hate motivated behavior and doing something about it. So,
that's what I said.
Okay. So I think we have agreement on what we want to do. We'll bring this back at the next meeting for a second reading. Great. Let's move on to item number 11.08, certification to the Board of Education for temporary athletic coaches for the 2017-18 spring sports season. Mrs. Newland.
Yes, I had said before that this would end up on the consent agenda, but here it is for you to see again. But next time you'll see it on the consent agenda. And these are this is the requirement that we present to you, that all of our coaches have been certified, that the assistant principals and athletic directors in these schools have all looked through and made sure that all of our coaches coming up for the next season are all have all been trained. And you can see them listed here for the spring coaches that are coming up in each of these documents.
Any questions from the board regarding
this? Yes, I have one.
Mrs. Roger, followed by Mr. Millar.
In looking through this, I had no issue with the coaching, but I noticed that we had boys basketball, but didn't have girls volleyball. And I wondered if that come again. Are they in different seasons?
Yes, they are.
Mr. Millar. Asked and answered.
I'm glad
but
they
I
know.
Appreciate her sensitivity.
I know golf
to
is in different
IX.
Seasons, but you're kind of quizzing me when it comes around to volleyball, Mrs. Rogers.
I just wanted to thank you for putting the code of regulations for the two sections in there. It made it a lot simpler.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion? Mrs. Roger has made a motion.
I'll second.
Seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there any further board discussion on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 11.09. This is a Measure D approval of the contract for the request for qualifications. Number 294, Baywood Elementary School, lease-leaseback construction services. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so Mr. Holcomb and myself actually went through our lease-leaseback contract, as well as working with DWK, our attorneys, to kind of bring in the new latest skilled and trained workforce and different types of options. So this contract that is in front of you for Baywood Elementary School has all of those things integrated into it. We're excited about having Wysong Construction as part of our team to work at Baywood. They've been great on some of our projects already, actually working for Acme as a sub, as well as kind of the setup for Bellevue Santa Fe. So very helpful. This is the first true kind of lease back where we're actually bringing the contractor in before we even start design. So that's it's a great way to kind of get started and get him involved in that pre-construction services right away. So before you tonight, and again, I talked about kind of the changes, the modifications that we're talking about for Baywood Elementary School that will tie into this. There will be the ADA accessibility issues on that campus that will have to be addressed as well with this project, in particular the front of the school. So that current turnout is probably not going to meet ADA specs. And so, again, those are all things that are addressed, that once you kind of work on the campus and kind of move forward, you have to meet all of those requirements. So this will all go through the Department of State Architects as we move forward.
Any questions from board members? Are you going to make a motion? Before we do, I want to go to the public. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. Mrs. Roger, you want to make a motion?
I move approval of contract approval for the request for quotation for number 294 Baywood Elementary School, LLB Construction Services.
Okay. Are you seconding, Mark?
Session so that when we get to this point in the board that I feel comfortable that I fully understand what you're presenting. So yes, I'd like to second this.
Great. And I would just like to comment that if we need to do ADA work at any of our schools, I say we need to do it and mm-hmm. make our schools accessible to all. So saying that, Mr. Quisenberry.
I hate to be a stickler. Are we approving resolution number 10-17-18?
No.
No.
Okay. This is 11.09.
11.09. Okay, I'm sorry. I just looked at something.
Any other questions from board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 11.10, Measure D, Design, Bid, Build, Construction, Delivery Method for Morro Elementary and Los Osos Middle School Paving Projects.
So we have a lot of needs throughout our district in terms of projects getting done, and one of those in particular is the Los Osos Middle School asphalt throughout the campus, parking lots, kind of path down. So this is, you know, we put together a whole kind of needs assessment for all of our school sites. And so in each summer, we've tried to do projects, painting, asphalt, concrete work, those types of things. So this summer, our goal is to redo the entire asphalt area here at Los Osos Middle School, as well as the asphalt at Morro Elementary School. So last summer, we had tried to do a lease-back contract to do some roof and other work at Morro Elementary. The cost came back in way too high in terms of the bids for that, so we kind of scratched that process. But we are now trying to tie these two projects together, so both the Morro Elementary side as well as Los Osos Middle School. And so our goal is to do this through the design bid build process. We feel like that's going to get us our best kind of pricing for this project, and our hope is to get that done prior to the summer months, before kind of the prices start to rise and we see escalation with people get a lot of work in terms of school contractors in particular during the summertime.
Great, thank you. Any questions from board members? Mr. Roger?
So what we're asking the board to do tonight is to allow us to go out and proceed with this process.
Okay. While Morrowell would not be a candidate for use of developer fees,
no.
Would Los Osos Middle School?
They would not.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion? Mr. Millar, I think you...
I will move authorizing the district to issue the RFQ, is it going to be?
Yeah.
We'll bid this project.
Bid.
Formal bid. Public bid.
Move staff moving the project. All right. Thank you.
So we have a motion by Mr. Millar.
I was
second.
Counting on just a thumbs up thing. That's why I was not as articulate as I usually am.
Yes. Silver tongue devil. Motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. Is there any further board discussion? And seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's.
The students and staff at Loams, thank you for those.
Yeah. Let's move on to the action consent agenda. If you have an item you would like pulled, please tell me. I'm going to ask that we pull item number 12.01. Anybody want to pull 12.02, 12.03, hold on here, I just got to write it down, 12.04, Okay. It's not much of a consent agenda, is it? 12.05. Okay. So do we have a motion to approve item number 12.02?
I make a motion to approve 12.02.
We have a motion to approve 12.02, seconded by Mr. Buckman. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this one? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. Any questions from the board? Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. I just wanted to pull item number 12.01 because you know what? Last board meeting, we forgot somebody very important who is retiring and who was on the list last month, and that would be our own Mrs. Holmes. So I just want to, you know, I know we're going to have plenty of time to thank you for your service, cry, and acknowledge the great job that you've done. I'll probably tell this story before, but I remember my first night driving out to a board meeting and sitting in a car with Stuart McElhaney, and Stuart said, you know, Chris, one thing, you don't have to save anything. You don't have to keep those binders because Mrs. Holmes will have it all for you and she'll have it all organized for you. And you know what? That is absolutely right. So, Kim, I just want to wish you well, and I know, like I said, we'll have plenty of opportunity to do that.
I'd like to move that we say no to her request.
It's too late. We already approved it last time.
Did I miss that meeting?
I'd like to move approval of item number 12.01. Seconded by Mr. Millar. Any discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? No one. Motion carries 7-0. Let's see. We need to move on to item number 12.03. I think you pulled that.
I just wanted to acknowledge the donation by Mary Jo and Michael Devitt. It was a donation of funds to purchase books for the library in memory of Bryn and Brittany Frost, granddaughters of Kathy Moore. That was particularly special.
Right, and they were the two women that were
Atascadero's
that were killed in the car accident on this.
Okay. Yes, yeah. It was very tragic.
Great. So, would you like to move?
And then I'd also move approval of item number 12.03.
And seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Carries 7-0. Let's move on. I don't even know who pulled 12.04.
I pulled 12.04 because this particular request for the robotics club from Los Osos Middle School is because they are going to the finals for robotics, and I just wanted to give a little shout out to them for doing that they will be traveling to Iowa to participate in the national finals for this event. So hooray for them. And on that note, I would move approval of 12.04.
Seconded by Mr. Quist. The motion by Mrs. Sheffer, seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Who pulled 12.05? Thank you, Mrs. Roger.
That was me, and I just I noticed as I went through my board packet that Monarch Grove is transitioning to a school-wide Title I school with 41.5% students eligible for free or reduced lunch, or what is actually just students in poverty. So we've had quite a bit of discussion tonight about achievement of our SED students, and I just wanted to make particular note that now all three elementary schools on the coast are Title I schools with over 40% children in poverty. And having made that comment, I'll move approval of item 12.05.
May I make further comment?
Yes.
And I will second them.
We have a
the
second.
I'll second it, and then with
yes,
further.
Please.
First of all, I want to recognize Principal Laura Storm is here. For
thank you, Mrs. Storm.
On behalf of her school and students. And second, does this actually mean that we will get some additional money coming to the district and then to Monarch Grove? It's just an apportionment that will be divided yet one more time. Thank you.
I will second the motion. I already did, and that's my comment.
And I don't know, Mr. Millar, I think you were the only person that was on the board at the time when we closed Sunnyside Elementary School and we redistricted Los Osos specifically so that Baywood would remain a Title I school and Monarch was not the Title I school. And now what we're seeing, and so unfortunately, what does that say about what's going on in Los Osos and the needs that our community has? And I know that Mr. Quisenberry and his wife Linda have been working on that and looking at our community and trying to support the needs of our community. So we have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 13.01, action. We already did that. 13.02, advanced agenda.
Actually, I do have something.
Yes, Mrs.
I don't know if this is actually appropriate or even necessary, because perhaps you've already thought of it, but I was wondering if it might be possible to answer the question that was raised by one of our speakers with the four children about teachers' first aid certified, whether that is the case and whether we might include that in the study session on the 15th. You may already be planning to do that.
I'm looking into the exact answers. We do offer CPR and first aid trainings, and I'm checking on first aid kits availability. So I am checking on that, and we'll get back to you as well as the speaker.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Let's move on to item number 14.01, reports by board members. Mrs. Sheffer. Followed by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Very briefly, I last week took my well-graduated son. He's been out of the district for a while now, but he wanted to go back to C.L. Smith and visit Mr. Aguirre. And what fun was that, to show up in Mr. Aguirre's classroom, and he stopped everything and let the kids ask my almost 27-year-old kid questions, and they wanted to know things like, was Mr. Aguirre as mean back then as he is now, and to what is Robin's favorite color, to is going to school, has it paid off for him? So they were very interesting, and there were several more in between there, and he answered impressively, stated that perhaps he should have been, I can look at Mrs. Shields for this, perhaps he should have been a little more focused in his early years. And he would suggest that to the students. But it was a great visit. I really appreciated Mr. Aguirre's willingness to let us drop in and visit. So I recommend it for the few teachers who are still here that our kids knew. So that's my report, the great. Happy part of it.
Mr. Buckman.
I hate to be a downer. I've been thinking a lot about Parkland and what happened there. It's really touched me, and it has over the years touched me. And I think it's just time that we recognize that unfortunately students have become victims, and maybe unfortunate that teachers and staff have become first responders. And I'm just trying to get a grip around what it is, but the concept of teachers being first responders and staff is just, I don't know, it's just moving. And then on a brighter note, and maybe we need that, I want to invite everyone to a film at the San Luis Film Festival. It's called Adventures in Public Education. It's about a homeschooled student. Basically, he decides to repeat his last year of high school and go to public school. And I think we can all sort of, I don't want to be a spoiler on this, but we can all sort of imagine what happens. So I'm sponsoring that film. It's Thursday, March 15th, and Friday of that week as well. It's at Downtown Cinemas, and I hope you all get to join me.
Jim.
Yeah, I just want to acknowledge my fellow board members and Rick Mayfield for the meeting on immigrant issues and information that was held at Pacheco. I thought it was extremely informative, and I thought the people that participated on the panel did an excellent job of clarifying many, many issues that people had. And I, in in light of what Mark has said, I just was thinking, I go to Del Mar nearly every Friday to pick up my grandson, and I love the fact that our schools are accessible. I get to see all those parents and grandparents waiting for their little kindergartners to come out, and I just maybe prematurely just bemoan the fact that we are considering making our schools harder and less accessible. It's a lovely thing to think of how they are now, and I don't know what to say other than that. I appreciate every time I go to Del Mar the openness and the care, the community, the teachers, the principal, all of them.
Thank you, Jim. Catherine?
Yes, I had the opportunity to visit Teach School on our boardwalk last week, and it just so happened that they were doing something very delightful, which is what they call a wax museum day. And so the students were dressed as their character, and they were affecting poses, and then the other students would come around and ask them questions about what they'd contributed. So there was it was everything from Einstein to Bill Gates. I mean, it was really quite fun. And the costumes, it was like being on the back lot at Warner Brothers. I mean, these kids really go to the nines on that. So that was super fun. And, yes, very, very grateful for doing that.
Walter.
Thank you. In lieu of writing a letter to the editor, I've decided to just make a few comments about the news coverage of the Memorandum of Understanding among Cayucas Coast Union and San Luis Coastal. It was a wonderful thing that we reached this memorandum of understanding, but both newspaper articles missed the point that this is not an infusion of money for San Luis Coastal.
Oh,
this
yes.
is a correction of an outrageous inequity that went on for so long that this board decided to turn down intra-district permit requests because we were getting students while Coast Union kept the money. And it was wrong. It should have been corrected sooner. I want to acknowledge the leadership of Dr. Prater and also the superintendent and board members at Cayucas for bringing this about. And my only complaint was the newspaper articles should have acknowledged the fact that right does eventually come about, even if it should have come about more quickly. Thank you.
And I'm just going to close with thank you, Walter. Last Thursday, I attended our California Collaboration for Educational Excellence LCAT meeting up in Sacramento, where a group again of school board members and superintendents talk about how the LCAP's being implemented. And I shared what we're doing with the Youth Truth Survey and the Student Senate, and around the table there was a lot of interest in that, especially the Youth Truth Survey, and I really want to applaud our school district for doing that, as well as interest in the Common Ground Task Force and what that could mean for our LCAP, and how we implement those things that we're finding out from all of the sources of information that we're getting. So I wanted to thank you all for doing that. And seeing that, I'm going to say that the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.